House. Welcome to the House Education Conference. Jumping ahead of myself there. House Education Finance Committee to order. We have a quorum. First order of business are the minutes. Representative Sensenbrenner, have you had a chance to look at the minutes? March 15th.
Yes, I have.
Representative Sensenbrenner, will you move the minutes for March 15th?
Yes, I will move the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Sensenbrenner. Representative Sensenbrenner moves the minutes for March 15th. Are there any questions on March 15th minutes? Representative Ream.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think there's a typo with Catherine Myers. I think we're missing a E, possibly. Minor, but.
Oh, thank you.
No?
Oh, it's stuck.
Yeah, there's
something. Oh, right. I guess there's something. All right. Thank you. Seeing no other further questions, all those in favor of the minutes say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. The minutes are adopted. Members, we have a full agenda, so we'll get right to it. We have House File 345 up first. Representative Hussein. Representative Hussein, welcome to the House Education Finance Committee. Let you get settled. And Representative Pryor, will you move House File 345 before the committee today?
Yes, Madam Chair, I make that motion.
Thank you. Representative Pryor moves House File 345 before committee today with the intention of laying it over for possible inclusion in the education finance bill. With that, Representative Hussein, go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Madam Chair and the members, I am very excited to present House File 345, which is very emotional and something that we have been working for many years to address this issue that for our community has been affecting for many years. Across of our community for the 21 years, current accountability constructed in Minnesota and across our country has centered on narrow data and a one-size-fit approach. Across our community, there is a recognition that current accountability instructed in the federal and state policy have not worked for our Black, Brown, Indigenous, and a poor student family for educations. The highest stakes emphasize is not given the space, respect needed for educators to improve teaching and learning. House File 345 include the work-led Place for United Community, which allies the global recommended the best practices in accountability policy. This work also very located approach, responsive, and working closely with the community to identify why the system and our student school works not working, why they're not graduating, and why they do not succeed in the classroom. While House File 345 does not eliminate requirement for Minnesota comprehensive assessment testing, we want to make sure that kids continue and taking that test. But what we're trying to find out is why the system has not worked and why kids are not graduating brown and black and indigenous kids and poor kids are from middle school and high school and all the way up. Because the success in life is our kids if we invest them in early on and to find out why, you know, they graduated in the society that we're living in, they can succeed. If you would allow me, I would love to call my testifiers. So today we have a full house. We have a student. We have a teachers. We have a parents. We have a community leaders who has been working on this for many, many years. And I want to thanks to Blissbury United who took the time to find out, you know, why. And they are invested for their own money for the last few years to dig and find out why the system and the kids are not, you know, succeeding in a classroom. If you would allow me, I would like to call one of my testifiers, because we have a few of them.
Thank you, Representative Hussein. I have Larry McKenzie and Akilah Humphrey on the list if they want to come on up. All right. Larry McKenzie, go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Larry McKenzie. Good morning, Madam Chair and members. As I've already mentioned, my name is Larry McKenzie, and I'm the Interim Director of the Office of Public Charter Schools for Pillsbury United Communities. Pillsbury United Communities is a 145-year-old nonprofit organization that operates four community centers and six social enterprises in Minneapolis and has regional impact. Our office serves as a public charter school authorizer, and we partner with 18 schools across the metro and greater Minnesota, serving more than 9,000 students. I would like to thank Representative Hussein for his leadership and boldness in championing House File 345. At Pillsbury United Communities, we have spent the past 2 years investing nearly $300,000 in developing ground-up accountability framework that is built for and designed by our students, our families, our educators, and the communities in which we serve. At Pillsbury United Communities, we have engaged with our ultimate authority, our community. And what our community have identified, they believe that the most critical measures a school should be held accountable for in terms of providing education to our students. This is a credible, rigorous, and valid reporting mechanism because we did the work. We've talked to our community, and from these conversations with hundreds of stakeholders, we've developed a framework that lives in this legislation you have before you today. During our pilot phase, similarly to the World's Best Workforce, the applicable high schools will have to administer the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment, which will be posted and will be available on the MDE report card. However, moving this bill forward would allow our schools to focus on the accountability measures that have been identified as needed by our students, our families, and community. And additionally, the appropriation included in this legislation would essentially match our investment at Pillsbury United Communities in developing the framework up to this point. The $300,000 grant that we're requesting would allow us to complete the implementation phase of the pilot and fine-tune the data we collect and evaluate from the school. We are ready to submit reporting and be held accountable to the measures that matter most to our students, our families, and our community. So again, thank you, Madam Chair and members of this committee for your consideration of House File 345, and I urge you today to support this innovative way to bring more meaningful school accountability intended to improve the academic outcomes of our students.
Thank you. Next up, Akilah Humphrey, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair and members. Hello, my name's Akilah Humphrey. I'm a junior at the Minnesota Internship Center. I'm here to talk about why career exploration and preparation is important. It's important to me because I believe that all schools should be held accountable for preparing all students for post-high school experience. Many schools do not equip all students with information for post-high school. Studies show that from Dallas, Texas University that 38.5% of African Americans have the lowest post-high school completion rate. I believe that meaningful education on a variety of post-high school options would address this issue. This includes information on trade school, military services, internships, and college. Since coming to the Minnesota Internship Center, I feel prepared for post-high school, and I would like for all students to feel that way. Thank you, Chair and members, and please support House File 345. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Members, we also had a member of the public sign up to testify. Matt Schaefer, please take a seat and state your name for the record.
Good Chair Youakim, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Matt Shaver, and I'm a teacher and the policy director at Allies. We advocate for policies that increase access to a rigorous and engaging education for Minnesota students. I want to thank Representative Hussein for a number of productive and thoughtful conversations regarding House File 345. We support funding innovation around school accountability, and many of the measures being proposed in this pilot are critical indicators of schools doing right by students, such as culturally relevant curriculum, discipline data, family engagement, and staff trainings about anti-racist pedagogy. Unfortunately, we can't yet provide an endorsement of the bill at this time because House File 345 proposes to measure those important metrics rather than in addition to academic outcomes. When initially written, House File 345 identified the 8 high schools in Pillsbury's portfolio as participants in the pilot program. That language was amended out in House policy, and so now all 20 schools in its portfolio, including elementary schools, would no longer be held accountable by the state to the standards set in the world's best workforce, standards such as meeting school readiness goals and third grade reading proficiency. Section 1 is titled Pilot Program to Improve Educational Outcomes and Accountability, but line 1.21 makes setting goals and measuring those educational outcomes optional. Why would the state feel comfortable lowering the academic accountability bar for a subset of charter schools when the other 330 traditional public school districts and 150 or so other public charter schools continue to be held to a higher standard? Authorizers can set performance goals with their portfolio schools, and I have no doubt that Pillsbury will continue to set rigorous academic goals with its schools, so why wouldn't the state continue to ask the same of those schools? Standardized assessments and locally adopted assessments do not tell us everything worth knowing about a school, its educators and its students, and should not be the sole measure of school quality. However, students from all backgrounds achieve on our MCAs every year, including hundreds of students in Pillsbury's portfolio of schools. Every child is capable of meeting our state standards. The state has a responsibility to hold publicly funded schools to these goals. We continue to advocate for a simple fix here that would still allow Pillsbury to partner with MDE to innovate while also maintaining a similar accountability bar for charters and traditional districts that is inclusive of academic outcome indicators. We respectfully suggest the bill be amended on line 1.21 to say must instead of may. Thank you again to Representative Hussein for your consideration, to Chair Youakim for the opportunity to testify today, and thank you, committee members, for your public service to our state.
Thank you. With that, members, Representative Hussein, did you have any other testifiers? I just had the two on the list. No? Okay.
I think we don't have any more testifiers, but also MDE, we are working with them closely, and we asking them that. Go ahead. I will have Larry to talk about it a little bit more.
Mr. McKenzie.
Madam Chair, I just want to make a correction to the previous testimony. The proposed bill is for 8 of our high schools in the portfolio and does not impact the remaining 12 K-8 schools in the portfolio. So I'm not sure how that information was misinterpreted.
Thank you, Mr. McKenzie. With that, members, we'll go to questions or comments from the table. Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for presenting this. I just had a couple of questions. Mr. McKenzie, how long have you been in this program, and then what kind of numbers are you seeing increase in the charter school program?
Mr. McKenzie.
So I've, how do I answer that question? I've been in with Pillsbury United Communities Office of Public Charter Schools for the last 10 years. I've been in the charter school world since 1997, having previously worked as a executive director of 4 charter schools, Minnesota, Arizona, North Carolina. So I've been in this work almost since the beginning. Are you talking about enrollment and numbers?
Yeah.
Representative Altendorf.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Mr. McKenzie, thank you.
Okay. So in terms of enrollment, I think it, because many of the charter schools offer a smaller number of pupil-to-teacher ratio, we have seen and continue to see a number of parents who opt out of the traditional public school system to go to charter schools. Also, if you listen to our previous testifier, one of the things that we see in particular in our 8 schools is that for whatever reason, right? And part of this evaluation is to help us understand that. But we see an increase of young people when they get to the secondary level, 9 through 12, going to traditional public schools, and for whatever reason, those schools are not meeting their needs. And so one of the intents of the evaluation is to look at alternatives, right? This is an alternative to the world's best workforce, right? And we want to look at things that the parents, teachers in our schools, and our students have said, if we could look at these things, we think that we can have better academic outcomes. And so like everybody else, as a parent, as an educator, and for many of you that may or may not, you know, I've coached a long time basketball coach in this state with and have been able to produce some of the highest GPAs in my work. So one of the things, and I know I'm getting off script, but one of the things that I'm most proud of in my work is, particularly as a basketball coach, 97% of my kids have been AB honor roll students. 100% have graduated and gone on to a two-year or four-year school. Always about academics, not athletes, but student athletes. We bring that passion to this work. So I want to understand that if we want to know, we part of this evaluation is not about being good. We want our kids to be great, and we want to figure out a way to evaluate and what the needs are to get them there in those spaces.
Thank you, Representative Alton. Our follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much for that testimony, and the reason why I asked how long you'd been in it, but I just wanted to commend you because the education system, as we've seen, a lot of kids have been leaving the public schools, and I truly want to commend you where you saw a gap and you saw a need for students, right? You saw a need of students of color, and you've worked to fill that gap by this program through these charter schools. So truly, I commend you for filling that gap. I can see your intent and that your passion is for the kids, and I love that. As far as this particular bill, I think with Matt Shaver just saying on this one testing, and maybe I'm just confused, but can we change that one word to the author so that it says must instead of may?
Representative
Singh.
Can I respond? I think we're just going to, we can continue working together offline, but at this moment I would turn that down.
Thank you, Representative Hussein. With that, we have some more people on the list. Just a reminder, charter schools are public schools too, just like all alternative schools. But Clardy and Representative Clardy.
Just a couple, well, first of all, thank you, Chair Joachim, and thank you, Rep. Hassan, for bringing this forward. Just a couple clarifying questions. This is down as a pilot program, but it seems like it's already existing. And so I'm assuming that there's been some data that's collected and that also I know that your students are still taking MCAs. Could you speak to, like, maybe the data collection that you've been doing and then also where your funding has been coming from up to this point?
Mr. McKenzie, Representative Hussein, who wants to take that?
I'll have Larry.
Mr. McKenzie.
So right now, the philanthropy community have supported the project up to this point. And at this stage, our investment has been in the research and development of the evaluation process. So what we're asking here is for additional support and funding to complete that process and actually use the evaluation for 2 years and then reporting back annually to MDE and to this committee.
Representative Clardy.
Thank you. So just a clarification. So you've been collecting data along the way, and you're just asking for funding to continue the study or continue the process that you're doing right now so you can complete the data collection process?
So, Mr. McKenzie.
I'm sorry. Okay. Hey, you're used to this. But anyway, what we've been doing up to this point is we've done surveys and focus groups with students, with parents, with community, in terms of what are the kind of things that you think are important to the success, to your success as a student? What do parents want to see? What does the community feel like as an authorizer, those things that we should be holding schools accountable for? And so we've collected that data, but in terms of the evaluation, and we've not at to date used this pilot program, equity framework, to evaluate the schools or the students.
Thank you, Mr. McKenzie. We've got about three more people on questions. I'm going to ask a question that might help clarify what you are trying to do right now. So currently, the school is still abiding by World's Best Workforce. You've created, with your own time and money and energy, this alternative evaluation, and now you want to take it the next step further to work with MDE to see if you can use this evaluation model instead of World's Best Workforce just for a short time, and see, just like charter schools do, try to find good things to bring back to other public schools. Is that accurate?
Madam Chair, I can't reach that far, but I will give you a fist bump.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy.
That's the correct, yes.
Thank you, Representative Hussain. It took me a while to get there, too, and I had the privilege of hearing this in that policy already.
And
so,
Police
Mr.
United,
Representative Hussain.
Yeah, Police for United has been doing a great job for, getting a grant from, I believe, Bush Foundation, trying to find out a little bit more why this is not, working. And now they need a notice that this is working for the kids and the teachers and the community. So they wanted to continue. That's the reason that why, and this is ongoing pilot. And the request that we made and the adjustment that we made was like, we want to make sure we get data outcome from this pilot by the end of the year.
I've got Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is a good bill. The beauty of, this country is we have 50 states and everyone does stuff differently and we try things. And clearly we have, the system that we have in place now isn't working for everyone. This is an opportunity to try something else. And I understand there are, I had a couple adopted kids who didn't speak English, and 10, 11 when I came, and one of them specifically had, needed a lot of life skills. And a lot of these kids, I think, not everyone needs to know calculus, but everyone needs to have very basic life skills, guidance, and a future, and a path in the future as to where they're going to go. And I think if that can, if this can help do that with some of these kids, we should give it a try. But there's nothing wrong with trying. So
thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Spencer Murrow.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hussain, for bringing this bill. I also appreciate the way that this program is really working to incorporate student feedback into evaluating their schools. I think we had some conversations when we had student voices here in committee a couple months ago just about, how can young people help us measure whether they think their schools are being successful. I think that that is really important. I just wanted to comment briefly on Matt Shaver's testimony. I do agree with him that I think it's really important that we are, in as much ways as possible holding charter public schools accountable in the same way that we are, including district public schools accountable. I think where I differ from him is I don't put much esteem into MCAs. I don't see them as a very valuable tool, so I don't really have that much concern in you not using them, especially when we have, schools where lots of parents are opting out, and so, those are not necessarily measures that are available to us anyways. I guess I will say that based on what he said, when I'm reading this, I don't see language that tells me specifically that high schools are the only ones that are going to be exempt from the MCAs. I think a lot of language is in the pilot program, and you all know who's in the pilot program versus not, but that just might be something you'd want to look at moving forward, because it's not clear to me that only high schools are going to be involved in that. But I don't necessarily say this year the same concern that it needs to be only high schools, but if that's the intention, you might want to make the language a little bit clearer.
Thank Thank you, Representative Sitzer-Mura. Representative Mr. McKenzie, real briefly, then we have
I just want to reiterate my testimony. Madam Chair, it says, during the pilot phase, similarly to the world's best workforce, the applicable high schools will have to administer the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment, which will be posted and available on the MDE report card.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for clearing that up. And we'll keep working on this language as we move on to make sure people's thoughts were addressed as well. And Representative Hussein, do you have any final comments?
I just want to thank for all my colleagues for listening. And the good news that I wanted to tell you is been passed in the Senate, and both parties have supported this program and to make sure that our kids have succeeded. And we do have teachers who came to testify, and the teachers are the pillar of our society. And we have a youth who testified that has been in the program. We have families and parents who's out there in the room has been testifying and working on this program for the last 2 years. This will be a great opportunity for our kids to evaluate economically, I mean, to make sure that they get the education and the support that they need. And I hope you can all support this great offer bill that we bring forward. Thank you for having me here today.
Thank you so much, Representative Hussein. With that, we'll lay over House File 345 for possible inclusion in the Education Finance Bill. Thank you. Next up, we have House File 1963. Representative Becker Finn. Thank you, Representative Becker Finn. Welcome to back again to Education Finance. With that, I will move House File 1963 before the committee and proceed.
All right. Thank you, Chair Joachim. So this is pretty straightforward. So this would allow school districts to carry over their American Indian Education Aid from fiscal year to fiscal year. There's still oversight of that carryover, so they would still have to be signed off on by the parent committee. They would also have to notify MDE that this is what they're doing. And there are a couple testifiers to this bill, but essentially we want to make sure that these funds are being used for our students. And, you know, if a field trip has to get canceled or there's some kind of change that happens that slows down the process of getting these funds approved, we don't want them to lose those dollars. We still want them to be able to spend those dollars for their students. And just the timing of the fiscal year and usually when we have staff available to approve everything, we just want to make sure we're getting those dollars out to support our Native students. And with that, we'll turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you so much. First up, we have remotely Marcia Vandenberg. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Marcia Vandenberg, and thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, for hearing House File 1963 today. I'm sad that I could not travel to be in person with you today, but McWitch, for everything you are doing for American Indian students. I am the current vice chair of the St. Francis Area Schools American Indian Education Parent Advisory Committee, or APAC. I've been involved with our APAC since its inception about 15 years ago. APACs approve and monitor state Indian Ed funding. In the spring of 2020, we hired an auditor to review our program to help it run more efficiently. That audit brought to our attention that there is not the ability to carry forward any of our Minnesota American Indian State funding. COVID also opened our eyes to the need to carry forward funding. We struggle with the timelines our district imposes on us to spend our funding yearly. All ordering must be completed by April 15th. If we must cancel a field trip, then we have to get approval to amend our funding, thus delaying the spending again. So it's March 15th, and our program is still awaiting final approval for spending our state funding. So please don't misunderstand. We are not unhappy about the state's thorough vetting of our expenditure plan. But if we purchase anything, the Department of Revenue says it must be delivered by June 30th. That's really more like June 1st for us because our Indian Ed staff do not work that many hours in June. We would never want to order an authentic buffalo robe, for example, without 100% knowledge that it's been received and respectfully stored. We want to use our state funding to educate our American Indian students the best that we can through our vibrant Indian education program. We want to use the funds as originally intended, just with a carry forward provision. Once again, Miigwech for allowing me to speak on behalf of House File 1963. Carry forward will help us serve our students much better.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have Sabrina Van Den Berg. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing House File 1963 and having me today. I am Sabrina Vandenberg and have benefited greatly from the American Indian Education Program. The APAC works hard to use the state funding to provide really good opportunities for students. From attending the Minnesota Indian Education Association youth programming to learning to play traditional winter games. I hear and see that these parents and Indian Ed staff experience challenges from not having a carry forward available to them. Anything to free up more time for the staff to work with students is a way better way, I think.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have Haley Daigle. Remotely, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Haley Daigle. Madam Chair and members of the House Education Finance Committee, thank you so much for taking testimony on House File 1963 today. My name is Haley Daigle, and I'm an enrolled member of the Brotherton Tribe and a descendant of the Stockbridge Munsee. I am from St. Francis, Minnesota, where I grew up, live, and work as the American Indian Education Coordinator. When I started my position at the beginning of the 2021-22 school year, I had a lot to learn about American Indian education. One of the duties of my position is managing our funding. As currently written, Indian education state funding applications are due November 30th, then reviewed and approved by MDE, with funding to be expended and all goods to be in possession by June 30th. In practice, our funding application is due November 30th, with the approval process possibly taking multiple months to complete. We received a request for revisions on February 2nd and are awaiting final approval. Our school district requests all purchases to be made by April 15th, which means the turnaround time between state funding approval and expenditure due date can be less than 1 month. That makes it extremely difficult to get things in a timely manner, especially when we are trying to make responsible purchases from native shops. In my position, I only work through the beginning of June, and I have extremely limited access to work in the buildings after that due to the district schedule, meaning if we purchase something online, I'm not able to verify if we get our supplies by June 30th. This bill is an important step for American Indian education to ensure that state funding can be spent in a responsible way. Thank you, House members, and please support House File 1963.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next up, we have Candy Sinha. Thank you for being with us today. Once you get settled, go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Uwakim and members of the Education Finance Committee. My name is Candy Sinha, and I want to thank you for taking testimony on Bill 1963 and then Ojibwe Miigwech to Representative Jamie Becker Finn and other members of the Minnesota House of Representatives for carrying the bill. I am an enrolled member of the White Earth Nation. I grew up in St. Paul, and I now live in Padnas Heights, Minnesota. The bill is an important step in Indian education. As this committee may well know, American Indian students fall far behind other population groups in testing scores and graduate at some of the lowest rates in our nation, around 38% of graduation rate. Most of those who drop out of school do so between the 7th and 12th grade. This is abysmal. Our Native students and Minnesota students, too, who deserve much better. This bill will enable our schools and our Native students to carry over funding that is beneficial to their educational journey. In addition, thank you for this time and a miigwech.
Thank you so much for your testimony. With that, members, I'll go to any questions at the table or comments. Seeing none, Representative Becker Finn, final comment.
Just appreciate members' support. This is a bipartisan effort. It was actually Senator Lucero's carrying this over in the Senate. You know, for folks who don't know, these Indian Ed programs really do support our students, and I think especially for kids like mine, who are often the only Native kids in a room, to have these funds available to support our students throughout the state is really important. So just appreciate the support today.
With that, the chair will labor House File 1963 for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. Thank you so much. Next up, we have Representative Taylor and Representative Kozlowski. Welcome back to the Education Finance Committee. With that, would Representative Pryor like to make a motion to move House File 1875 before the committee with the intention of laying it over for inclusion in an education finance bill?
So moved.
That's the motion, and representatives, go ahead.
Good morning, members. Representative Heather Keeler, District 4A. We've sat in many spaces and have talked about the importance in our lives that Indian education has played, not only as students growing up in school districts that utilize services that were provided through that, but also I served as an Indian education liaison. So this is the passionate work that I deeply understand and really came here to advocate for. So I'm excited to be here presenting 1875. We had really good, robust conversation about a majority parts of this bill because a lot of it is around policy. And what we have done is we've taken all the collections of all of our ideas as the Native American Legislative Caucus, working with the governor's office, and have just put it into one collective bill for Indian education. And so that's what we will be going over today. I just encourage us to look at this investment in the fact that representation does matter. I've said it in a lot of spaces that I have 4 degrees, and I've never seen a teacher at the front of a classroom that ever has looked like me, nor have I ever sat in classrooms that that taught about us accurately. And so this is just investing in a future that I really believe deserve to see themselves. And also it's expanding the opportunity for all of us to have deeply rooted opportunities to learn about the indigenous cultures that are here. And we've said it many times in the last couple of days that we have 11 sovereign nations and we sit on 100% ceded treaty territory. So I do believe that this is part of our responsibility to continue to invest in these areas. I'll pass it over to my co-presenter.
Thank you, Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair, and members of the committee. Buju Ozawa Anakwa, McGizinian Dodan. I'm also really excited and proud to be here with this slate of bills and this packages, and just want to say my thanks to the Department of Education and to our American Indian offices, families and students, and Minnesota's 11 tribal nations that share geography with Minnesota. Because this bill is a really important one that meets the unique needs and challenges, but also invests in the strengths and contributions of our people. Like Representative Keeler, I also grew up attending schools where, in fact, we had a mascot, an Eskimo. And when we talk about representation matters, absolutely critical because, you know, it was just Tribal Sovereignty Day here, and we heard about how so many folks might not even know that we exist and that we're here in the flesh. And that we're thriving today. And for me, that was certainly the case growing up in a school where we didn't have enough students to have an Indian education office at my high school. And the difference that that makes having a kid in our public schools, and I think, you know, for folks who are both part of the education policy as well as this, you heard our remarks last time about how we have a long history with, for example, our traditional medicines, with our language, and many different policies and laws that have blocked us and stripped and try to prevent us from accessing those. And I think the most important thing that I wanted to come here to convey is that those things never went away. And in fact, today they're having a resurgence in reclaiming and picking up. And so what you are investing in with this package is representation, is accurate and authentic and genuine representation, and also giving our American Indian families, our educators, the tools and the levers that they need to really drive forward what we know is works, and that's our culture, our medicine, in that not only does it work, but it's a protective factor against things like poverty and homelessness and the different, just so many disparities that we face. So I have a kid, like you heard from Rep. Becker Finn before us in that bill, that attends a public school that has an Ojibwe immersion program where every single day she gets to go and learn a language and a culture and have a really robust education, and that's good for our Native learners and that's good for our non-Native learners as well. So I just thank you so much for considering and urge your support to today invest in the strengths and future of our youth and our families and our people.
Thank you, Representative Kozlowski. With that, we have two testifiers. Glenda Martin on remote. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, committee members. Ani and Mikinaki Kwe and Dijnakaz, Obashing and Ndujba. Hello, Glenda Martin, Red Lake Band of Chippewa Indians, Panema District Representative. I am also a member of the Tribal Nations Education Committee. As a tribal leader representing Red Lake Nation and a member of the TNEC Committee, I am asking for your support on House File 1875, American Indian Education for All Students in Minnesota. The bill is essential for American Indian students. Many of the proposals have been put forth for the past 5 to 6 years. We need to break the cycle of ignorance for all Minnesotans. We all need to know and authentically recognize our tribal communities, their histories, understanding, and current issues. We work with many different entities so that American Indian students will reach their full potential within the school communities through meaningful, equitable, and targeted educational experience that affirms and values their unique cultural identities. There are many pieces to this bill. All of them were carefully designed to clarify the statutes and ensure that American Indian students will be able to reach their potential. All American Indian students come to our districts and schools with unique assets. These pieces are all aimed at closing the achievement and opportunity gaps for them and to help districts and schools to be better equipped to assist American Indian students succeed educationally. If our American Indian students do better, we all do better. I would like to see all students learn about the history of all 11 tribal nations in Minnesota, including treaties, sovereignty, treaty rights, and Indigenous language, and that this be added in as an academic standard. It is time for all Minnesota to learn about the 11 tribal nations and to learn about the history of who we are and where we come from. Thank you, Madam Chairman and committee members. I ask that you support House File 1875. Miigwech, Glenda Martin.
Thank you for joining us today. With that, we also have Adosh Uni. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education, and thanks for the opportunity to provide some supportive testimony today on HF 1875. I first want to thank the representatives here for their leadership in this space. This is really shining a light on an area I think that they've testified to eloquently that has not gotten a lot of focus over the years, and now we're seeing the culmination of a lot of proposals that have been seen here and there over the years, but really are in this package for the first time, and we're being able to hear really important voices and grapple with some important concepts that are going to have a huge impact on some of our most underserved students. There are a range of policy items in this bill that I'm not going to touch on today because we focused on those in the policy committee, but I do want to point out how much of an impact they have for students, families and communities on a daily basis as well as a long-term basis for improving their educational outcomes. But there are some budget items in here that I'm going to briefly describe, and then I'm happy to answer any questions, technical questions we may have on the budget or if there's space for on any of the policy questions. So the several items in the budget bill that I'm going to focus on, there's three major ones. The first one is an additional $1.61 million in funding for the Minnesota Indian Teacher Training Program. This is a program, basically what the title says, it's about recruiting and getting American Indian Teacher candidates the training they need for becoming licensed teachers. This is based on a partnership between districts, school districts, and higher education institutions to provide teacher training for these candidates. In addition to the funding amount, this is a one-time $1.61 million, we're making a programmatic change where right now the funding is being able to be used by candidates for only 2 years. We're expanding that to a five-year period. This is much more representative of the candidate's experience across the college experience. Not a two-year experience, it's a four-year experience, sometimes 5 years. And so we want the candidates to have some relief knowing that they're going to have access to those funds for the and the institutions will have access to those funds to support those candidates over the course of their tenure at the institution. The next proposal we have is an increase to American Indian Education Aid and extending it to joint powers districts. This would be about $13.5 million in the first biennium and close to $15 million in the second biennium. And this would also make clear that American Indian Education Aid can only be used for non-Native students after all American Indian students' specific cultural and academic needs are met, and as well as I mentioned, extending the aid to joint powers districts. And then finally, the budget also proposes $7.5 million for Native language revitalization grants. So these would allow school districts and charters to begin offering language instruction in Dakota or Anishinaabe languages or another indigenous language or indigenous language to the United States and or Canada. Grants will fund teachers and course materials, and this will be $7.5 million on an annual basis ongoing. And then finally, we are proposing a non-cost proposal in the overall American Indian Education package. That would be a 10.72% Tribal Head Start set aside that would make Tribal Head Start programs have stable funding. This is no cost proposal. It is being carried in the early learning space, but one that I feel should be noted in this overall package and one that the administration has been pursuing for several years. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Uni. With that, members, questions or comments at the table? Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to the bill authors. I will be really excited to sign on in support of this bill, and I want to speak for the kids in my rural, mostly white district. There is a ton that they can learn about here, too, so especially the Section 4, Subdivision 5, Indian Education for All, I feel very strongly about when my kids come home telling me things that are just untrue from school. It's hard for me to alone be able to counter that, and our kids deserve to know the truth. And I'm thrilled about this bill. Thank you for all of your work moving this forward, and just a lot of gratitude. So, language, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the authors for bringing this bill forward. I think it's really exciting. I think, you know, I'm a person who really enjoys the diversity of cultures within our state and our country, and I think it's great that we're finally going to be funding Indian culture and the language classes. It's long overdue, and I appreciate all the work that's been put forward to, you know, get this passed. I will say, too, I come from the city of Chanhassen, and I also represent Chaska, and I learned when I was at the Science Center in St. Paul that a lot of the names in our area are actually Native names. So I think we all have a lot of learning to do, and I look forward to that, and thank you very much for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative Ream. Members, any other comments or questions? Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks. One of the things that I think we have to recognize about this bill is how you brought together so many different pieces, but that all of these pieces are essential. And we can't say, oh, part of this bill is good, but we're going to leave out that part, because all of this reflects some of the things that we can actually do now. And this isn't about just, talking points. This is about meaningful change in our schools in Minnesota. And that, as we said in our policy committee when we heard this particular bill, as we know better, we will do better. I mean, we can say it those ways, but that's what I'm saying right now. Because we will know better, we will do better. And that's a commitment that we can make when we pass this bill. And I strongly believe this is the year that we will do it, and that will make a difference.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. With that, final comments to the authors. Thank you, members, for listening. I said this in the policy committee that my first really clear experience with racism happened in the classroom in elementary. And it changed me. It changed my family, and it changed the way that we viewed education as an opportunity to help me grow. So the way that we look at things as Indigenous people is very holistically. We bring all of the components together that make us strong and healthy, and that is why we packaged this bill in the way that we did. It's making sure that we're seen in a really respectful way. It's making sure that we open up opportunities for conversation with our tribal communities. And then it's helping individuals grow through education. As I've learned in my adult life, is a lot of people really just don't know. And we don't blame you for not knowing. But once you know, it's our opportunity to grow and learn and really partner in the beautiful parts of who we are. So to me, what that elementary experience did is it really created a harmful space in education that led me to attempt suicide twice, because I didn't see myself in these spaces. Nobody talked to me about the realities of who we were, and it really, by not talking about it, made us invisible in spaces that were very much here. And so I know it's education, and I know that it's important, but really it's also inclusionary action. It is an opportunity to prevent suicide as well. And if you know our communities and you know our communities well, we need access to healthy opportunities. And we all believe that's through education. I also want to point out that this has been a very bipartisan effort. The language piece in this is an Erdahl bill who's been carrying this for a very long time. And so this is a collective effort to what we believe is to really do right by all of our students in Minnesota. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Keeler. Thank you, Representative Kozlowski. Did you want to say anything?
Sure. Thank you, Chair. I'll just add that in terms of the pieces in this bill, I really appreciate the comment that this is holistic and it can't be piecemeal, that the way we do so many things as Native peoples is we use our bundles. And I look at this as that bundle, that gift, that legacy that we're carrying forward for our kids, and what is going to permeate out and strengthen our families and our communities and our nations as well. And I think about growing up, and on my reservation, there is two first language speakers remaining, and one of those is my cousin, my grandma's cousins. And what it is that investing in the language revitalization and being able to restore and reclaim and pick that up, because If you can strip people of their land, of their language, of their hair, of their culture, then what is there left, right? And so for us to be able to reclaim and restore and pick that back up for our future generations, and when we talk about curriculum development and the millions of dollars that's going to go into that piece, it isn't just translating word for word English into Ojibwe. It's all of those aspects, the cultural grounding that is really takes so much time for our educators to be able to do that. And so there's so many things to say, but I just want to say a big miigwech to all of you, and I look forward to passing this across the finish line.
Thank you both. And with that, I'll renew the motion that House File 1773 is laid over. Oh, sorry, that House File 1875 is laid over for inclusion in the Education Finance Bill. Thank you. And next up, we have House File 1773. Representative Clardy, welcome back to your Education Finance Committee. Why don't you go ahead and move House File 1773 before us for possible inclusion in an education finance bill.
Great, I'd like to move it forward. Chair Yukim, would you like me to move the D3 too as well?
Yes, please. Please move the A2 amendment.
Okay.
And then maybe explain that just briefly.
Perfect. I'd like to move that. This has been heard in policy, and with that in mind, there were some changes that were made. And some of the changes were made were to make it more inclusive, including tiers 1, 2, 3, and 4, and then also changing some of the language from like must to may. And then also we heard from the school districts about, and the committee, I should say, about the distribution of funds. And so we were mindful with that. And so we made changes to make sure that that was represented. So may I ask my testifiers to come up?
Yes, thank you, Representative Clardy. Let's first get the A2 amendment on there. Any questions on the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The A2 amendment's adopted. With that, we'll go to your first testifier, which I have up here, Dan Armagas. Oh, no, sorry. Let's see. Lieutenant Dr. Robert John Peterson. Why don't you go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Leotawa Dr. Robert John Peterson, and I work as a long-term consultant with the Minnesota Education Equity Partnership. Thank you for the time to be here today to testify in support of Bill 1773. This bill proposes that some investments be directed to provide LEAPS Act-specific support and accountability, in addition to providing funding for schools through indexing. I urge the committee to help ensure that English learners and SLIF learners be provided high-quality educational services that both meet the minimum bar of compliance while also continually striving for the high bar of doing what is best for students and their learning. Increasing academic excellence for ELLs and SLIF learners can and must be the result of fiscal investments being proposed in this bill and other bills being made this legislative session. Advancing racial equity and academic excellence is about getting less racially predictable and better academic outcomes for ELLs and SLIF learners. There is a large achievement gap in Minnesota, and additional LEAPS Act-specific funding would allow for more staff, in partnership with an EL Parent and Community Advisory Council, to work and partner with schools in better addressing the needs of ELLs and SLIF learners. Only 12.5% of English learners were proficient in math in 2022, as compared to 45.5% of the general population, representing a 33% gap in achievement. Only 11.8% of English learners were proficient in reading in 2022, as compared to 51.7% in the general population, representing a 40% gap in achievement. Building the infrastructure for schools, the state, and the local communities to build and create mutually supportive and accountable relationships is a critical feature of this bill. Doing so in ongoing and scalable ways through indexing and through the creation of a council represent bold and innovative ways to get better and more racially equitable results for ELLs and SLIF learners. Additionally, healthy relationships between schools at the local level, the state, Minnesota Department of Education, and the communities promote partnerships necessary for supporting ELLs, SLIF learners in achieving their hopes and dreams of becoming future educators, doctors, lawyers, legislators, and any other occupation that they seek to take on. Lastly, racial equity for ELLs and SLIF learners is a moral imperative for people of color and Indigenous, and I would argue for Minnesota schools, which there are 325 school districts in the state. Supporting ELLs and SLIF learners by providing bold and innovative financial investments, new ways of thinking about how to meet the needs of ELLs and SLIF learners and the students, staff, and communities that serve them, is not only sound fiscal policy, it is race equity-centered education policy focused on getting better academic outcomes for ELLs and SLIF learners and each of our children. Faftai Laba Manwia. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. With that, we have Dr. Reverend P.M. Crowley-Hillstrom. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Dr. Rev. P.M. Crowley-Hillstrom. I currently serve
our state in the role as the Director of Research for the Minnesota Educational Equity Partnership. As a recovering district administrator, I think I have a few perspectives on how to support schools and the needs specifically related to our students, specifically our EL students. I want to frame my brief comments around three components connected to MDE's 10 equity commitments, and I'll just choose three of them as I frame the comments. But I want to start with number four, go local and engage to develop leaders at all levels. Micro-credentialing is going to be a critical component, and it is in this bill. There's four primary areas that as a person who is responsible for EL programming in the fifth largest district with over 100 languages, things I didn't know when I took that responsibility. One, instructional leadership. We need to move into this space of culturally validated pedagogy. There are several different models out there, the CLEAR model, one that you'll see coming through Manip, but several of them that help us do that, and leaders need opportunities and credentialing to support that. Data collection and analysis. We know there's several different types of data that are being collected, and really how to effectively use them to understand. Access data. We know that many of our students are not completing a trajectory that we would like to see and how to use that data. Behavior data and student data. And thirdly, my partner over here, Dr. Leah Tawa, John Peterson, talked about family and community engagement. There's desperately a need for that type of credentialing and support within that. And finally, for financing Minnesota education systems. We know that there's cross subsidies that come across, but many districts don't have the ability to even within a formula to meet the needs of ELLs that are taking those cross subsidies and putting them right in their general funding programs. The second one around MDE that I like to bring up is five, follow the money. Allocate resources to learners who need it the most. The statistics and the data are very clear. Our EL and our emerging multilingual students are in desperate need of reform within our educational process. We know in 2014 the LEAPS Act came through, and many of us, myself as a district administrator, did not know there was four basic provisions within that. Those provisions are very clear: instructional differentiation, multicultural family voices, multi-learning and multicultural positions at education as an economic asset, not just an educational one, and that teachers and administrators need to receive appropriate preparations and continued professional development, i.e. a micro-credentialing. The last piece that I would like to bring as it relates to those 10 commitments is eight, value people, focus on teachers and leaders, and develop the people we have. We have tremendous teachers in the state of Minnesota, dedicated, hardworking people, and administrators that follow that same path. But they deserve, like I needed, opportunities to grow so that I can support the students and the people there. If we're going to elevate the profession of teaching, we must invest in our teachers and equip them to be able to meet the needs of our students. Lastly, within that concept, it's important to understand that the LEAPS Act that I referenced briefly is referenced in 42 other statutes. I'll give you an example. Strengthening the commissioner's authority to direct districts who are chronically struggling with multilingual learners. Requiring preparation and continued professional development. Requires districts to include principals. I could go on and on. I won't for this moment, but I thank you so much for the opportunity to share the importance and how this bill begins to address these critical needs for both our districts, teachers, and most importantly, our emerging multilingual students. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Clardy.
Wonderful. First of all, thank you so much for hearing this bill. This bill addresses the how to increase the efficacy of investing in EL students and to achieve race equity. And there are three things that I would like to lift up. One, making an ongoing investment in EL students and the SLIF students and the staff is critical, as both groups of students represent the fastest group of growing in the demographic area in K-12. So that's really important. ELs and SLIF learners also have an incredible talent, and they will be contributing to leading the Minnesota world's best workforce in the 21st century. So the second thing I'd like to lift up is the one-time investment in EL learners and SLIF learners is critical, and so is ongoing long-term investments for indexing the base education formula allowance. So both investment approaches close the gaps and making good on the education debt that's been created by systemic racism. So both investment approaches represent racially equitable ways of supporting the staff in the program and the ELs and the SLIF learners. This is something that has to happen. The third thing is that linking the EL basic skills revenue and the EL concentration revenue to the basic education formula allowance represents a relatively small and incremental yet important approach to investing in ELs and SLIFE learners and staff that serve them in a long-term manner. So we can address the immediate need, but we need to make sure that there's an ongoing process so we are not back where we are in 3 years. So it's time to invest in our ELs and our SLIFE learners.
Thank you so much, Representative Clardy. Going to the table for questions or comments, Representative. Oh, sorry, did we have one more? Oh, a public testifier. I'm so sorry. We have Andrew Morris here. I clearly did not read all the way down my list. Go ahead, state your name for the record and proceed.
It's quite all right. For the record, my name is Andy Morris, and I serve as the Public Affairs and Legislative Liaison at the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. Madam Chair and members of the committee, the Council is charged by the legislature with the statutory duty of advocating on behalf of Minnesota's Asian and Pacific Islander communities, acting as a liaison between state government and Minnesota's API communities, and serving as an advisory body to the legislature and governor. It is in this capacity that we strongly support the provisions of House File 1773 and urge its passage. In Minnesota, there are roughly 76,000 identified English learners, about 10% of the overall student population. At the Council, we are too aware of the disproportionate loss suffered by our most vulnerable communities during the last few years of the COVID-19 pandemic, including by English learners and their families. The loss of in-person education and personal interactions with educators has caused most learners to progress more slowly, if not regress. The pandemic has shed light on already existing disparities and has reinforced that we are not doing enough to serve all Minnesotans. And this is especially true for English learners. Educational gaps that already existed in our state have been exacerbated by the pandemic and will take many years to fully understand, but we must take this opportunity to act now to initiate much needed support for English learners. This bill will address their critical needs by providing certainty that English learners will have the support they need to succeed, providing an essential foundation for the future and helping to close the state's achievement gaps. We thank Representative Clardy for offering this bill and the committee for its consideration. We urge its adoption to provide the resources and support that English learners and families need and deserve to reach their potential and thrive. Thank you.
Thank you so much. With that, now we will go to the table for questions or comments. Representative Spencer Murray.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Clardy, for bringing this really important bill and this important conversation to the committee. And I remember when we heard Representative Herr's bill around the English language learner cross subsidy, you know, that I think the committee agreed that, you know, we need to give districts more support in terms of financial resources for supporting English language learner students. And we want to think about better accountability for those funds because we know that our English language learners are not being served. So I guess I'm seeing this bill kind of as potentially an answer to that. I think I see that the A2 amendment is giving more funding to the district than previous. I think I would say I still feel a little bit uncomfortable about the amount of 50% to district, 50% to MDE. I really like the Parent and Community Advisory Council and their ability to kind of advise districts on the kinds of programs. But I'm still just a little bit uncomfortable with the funding ratio. And so I'm wondering if you all can talk just a little bit more about how you came to that and how do you see this bill? I guess it's two questions. So one, how you came to the ratio. And then second question is, how do you see this bill in relation to the English language learner cross subsidy bill? Are they complementing one another? Are they different approaches? Do they have overlap? Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Clardy or Dr. Luetana John Peterson.
They absolutely complement each other, and I could start it, but I'm going to just let the doctor go through.
And please, briefly, we still have one other bill to get to. So thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Committee Member Sintzmura. If you consider the EL concentration revenue, which is currently at 250 per pupil per English learner, and the 704 for the basic skills revenue. Right now we're sitting at 954 per student. It's been that way for about 20 years. If you take into consideration a cost of living adjustment in fiscal year 24 of say 2%, which is kind of an average, the multiplier that you'd be looking at would be right around $20 per student additional. I say that because this bill would not result in a significant amount of additional revenue. We're really talking about a little less than $1.5 million. And so when you look at 50% of $1.5 million, you're looking at $750,000 roughly spread across all the districts in the state that have English learners. So it really won't be a huge increase to school districts, even if it was 100%. In the case of the department, however, some of that revenue, $750,000, would go to the EL, Parent and Community Advisory Council, and presumably to LEAPS-specific activities. Currently, there's only one person working to implement LEAPS legislation around the state. There's one full-time employee working with districts and charter schools in Greater Minnesota and the Metro. Each year, this person works with over 50 districts, of which there are 325 total, as I mentioned, to provide coaching, professional development, program evaluation, data analysis, and shared research in order to improve instruction for the nearly 80,000 English learners in Minnesota. And so the resources, the additional 30% and the 20% for the EL Parent Advisory Council would help to build relationships to do the things that Representative Clardy has mentioned and Dr. Hillstrom has mentioned.
Thank you, Representative Sensenmer.
No, thank you. That's helpful when you kind of put it, the numbers in perspective. I understand. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, Representative Clardy, final comments.
Great. The time is now to invest in the EL and the SLIFE students. And this is one way, just like when you do your budget at home, you don't do it just for the week. You do it, you know, long term. This is one way to assure that our students can keep growing and that the efficacy of the program will continue.
Thank you so much, Representative Clardy. With that, we'll renew the motion that a House File 1773 be laid over for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. Final bill on the agenda, Representative Knutson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Knutson. Thank you for pinch-hitting for Representative Bennett. Would you like, and welcome to your committee, would you like to move House File 1589 before us with the intention of laying it over for possible inclusion in an education finance bill?
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Knutson. Go ahead and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would you mind if my testifiers came up right away?
That'd be perfect.
Okay, thank you. Members, House File 1589 establishes a special education teacher pipeline grant program. The program provides grants to school districts, charter schools, and cooperative units that partner with the teacher preparation program. The grant funding is equally divided between the 7-county metro area and those applicants outside of the 7-county metro area. A grant recipient must use the grant funds to support participants who are employed as paraprofessionals, other unlicensed staff, and Tier 1 or Tier 2 teachers as they complete a teacher preparation program to become special education teachers with a Tier 3 or a Tier 4 license. Representative Bennett is working with MDE and MDE staff on some MDE recommendations that she will present at a future time. At this time, I'd like to turn this over to our two author testifiers to explain more about the bill and why it's needed, starting with Dan Armagost.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
I am Dan Armagost. I'm the executive director for the Southern Minnesota Education Consortium. I'm here today to support House File 1589, the Special Education Teacher Pipeline Program, on behalf of the MSBA, MREA, AMSD, MESA, and MACE organizations. This committee is well aware of the teacher shortages that our districts are currently facing. Finding licensed staff is becoming more and more difficult. This is nothing new in the field of special education. We have been facing this challenge for years. SMEC formed in part due to the challenges of finding properly licensed staff. In 2008, we created our Grow Your Own program, sending teachers back to school to become licensed in our areas of need. Over the next few years, SMEC went from contracting most of our specialists to being able to sell services, and from sending students out of our co-op to offering a full continuum of service. Sending staff back to school has been a cornerstone of who we are as a co-op. It has helped with teacher retention and recruitment. We have always made sure we had staff in the pipeline attending school to become licensed teachers. Currently, 47% of our Tier 3 and 4 teachers, special education teachers, were sent back to school by SMEC. Our partners at Region 10 started offering tuition supports in 2017, and we have sent back 79 teachers to become licensed. Federal funds can no longer be used for this purpose, except for fully licensed special education teachers. Currently, 34% of the special education teaching staff at SMEC are Tier 1 and Tier 2 licensed. We would like to offer tuition support to these teachers, but can't due to the limits on the use of our funding. This essential tool is no longer allowable and has stopped the flow of qualified staff to our districts, which will have ongoing and significant effects on our students. This is where House File 1589 can help. It fills a gap in funding and will bring new teachers into the profession. The state's current and past Grow Your Own grants have not been accessible to rural districts who are also struggling to find teachers. The cooperative's recruitment efforts often fall short because there are simply not enough teachers graduating from programs, and when they do, our small schools and rural communities are competing with the large salaries and sign-on bonuses that are being offered by larger districts. We don't want to compete for the same individuals. This bill can help us focus on our local workforce, specifically our paraprofessionals that already live in our communities. Some of the best teachers and special education leaders have started as paraprofessionals and with our help have gone back for their license. Ms. Bednar is a teacher in Lyle School District, a district where currently 75% of the district's special education staff are Tier 1 licensed. She is one of the several examples where tuition supports could have benefited the teachers, students, and the district as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next up, state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Bree Bednar. Thank you for having me. I am a high school special education teacher at Lyle High School. In my 20s, I taught middle school language arts for 4 years, but because I taught at a private school, I was not required to carry a teaching license. When I left that job, it was with a heavy heart. I loved teaching, but recently divorced, I was pushed to seek a higher paying position. I spent the following 15 years serving my community through nonprofit organizations in executive leadership roles. My desire to help others overcome barriers and see them succeed is what drives me. This desire and my lived experience as a person with disabilities ultimately drove me to find my way back to teaching, but specifically within special education. As I was making the decision to undertake this major career shift, an important factor was my district's ability to cover the cost of my licensure attainment. Unfortunately, shortly after school started, and I'd already fallen in love with each of my students, I received difficult news. Recent interpretation of the law prohibits my district from using federal funds to send Tier 1 teachers back to school for this licensure. This news has created considerable hardship in the plans I had for a lifelong career back in teaching. In following my passion, I took a $14,000 a year pay cut to teach, but I did it with excitement, as well as the understanding that my educational costs would be covered and I would move up the pay scale over the next several years. Not only did I take a considerable pay cut, but now I'm being asked to pay an additional $11,000+ to complete the education needed to ensure I will have valid teaching credentials when my Tier 1 license is exhausted in 3 years. The young people I have come to adore are the ones that will ultimately suffer if I am unable to find a sustainable solution. Since the beginning of last school year, they've already had 4 different SPED teachers in the position that I have filled. Understandably, their trust in me hasn't come easily.
They've asked me countless times if I'll still be there next year. My students deserve consistency, as well as a highly trained educator, and I want to be this for them. For Minnesota's future, the cost of not having qualified educators in special education is astronomically higher than the tuition I need to move forward with securing my state-mandated credentials. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, and thank you for being a teacher. Next up, we have some public testifiers, Laura Mogelson and Shayna Morris, if you want to come up to the table. Go ahead, Laura Mogelson. State your name for the record. Proceed.
My name is Laura Mogelson. I'm from the Minnesota Association of Colleges of Teacher Ed. Chair Joachim, members, thank you for listening to my testimony in support of House File 1589. We all know Minnesota has a special education teacher shortage. Districts report that this is the most difficult area to fill. We also know that the largest number of our Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers are teachers of special education. Time and money are both known barriers. We have the vehicle with Tier 2 licensure to hire special education teachers, but we are in great need of money to support these teachers in paying for teacher prep. I'm sure you're all aware of last October's memo that came from the U.S. Department of Education regarding Minnesota Department of Education's assurance that our credentialing laws here in Minnesota are in compliance with the IDEA. They are not. And we really need to fix this, and this is the moment where we can fix it. And we need the funding, and this bill can really help us get there to pay for tuition, to enroll people, to make adequate progress in preparation programs. The Minnesota Association of Colleges of Teacher Ed, we have been in conversations since the memo came out with Pelsby about how we can, we have programs, many of them that cater to Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers. We also have ideas of ways to be more innovative and more accessible. And so this comes together now at a time where we have teachers that need programs. We're ready to provide the programs. We have districts that want to support their teachers. We need to come into compliance. We're at risk of losing $207 million in federal funding if we don't fix this problem for special education. So I strongly encourage you to support House File 1589, and I want to thank Representative Bennett for her leadership on this, and thank you also, Representative. So thank you.
Thank you, Laura Mogelson, and thank you for expressing the sense of urgency, and Representative Bennett and I have also been working on amendments to make sure whatever funds we can provide, we're directing first to that move from Tier 2 to Tier 3, just because there is that sense of urgency there. Next up, we have Bree Bendar. Please state your name. Oh, sorry. Shayna Morris. I'm on the wrong page again. Go ahead. State your name for the record.
Shayna Morris, Assistant Director of Government Relations at MDE. First, we'd like to thank the author of the bill, Representative Bennett, and now Representative Knudsen for being here, for bringing this forward. It's an important topic impacting students, educators, and school leaders that we believe requires a legislative and a funding solution this session. As you've just heard, this memo from OSEP was released in the fall, clarifying states' obligations regarding requirements related to personnel qualifications under the Individual with Disabilities Education Act, or IDEA. The clarification from the feds impacts approximately 800 Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers in Minnesota who need to find a path to progress towards full certification in order for us to maintain compliance. This is why we particularly appreciate the amendment that was put on in the Education Policy Committee. Without action to support these 800 Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers to move towards this full certification, our districts could face even more difficult staffing challenges, and more importantly, students with disabilities could lose access to the services that they need to help them succeed. The governor's budget, I would just mention, does take a slightly different approach, two-prong approach to increasing access to teacher prep providers and also mentoring supports. The first approach is building off of a Grow Your Own program focused on teacher diversity by adding a prong specific to filling teacher shortage areas, in this case, with an emphasis on special education. And then complementary to that is increasing access to licensure programs is a proposal to increase access to mentoring, which is a component of what's needed here as well. And so while we take different approaches, we really appreciate the author bringing this bill forward and the amendment forward as well, and being willing to continue to engage with us on finding a solution with our shared goal in mind. Thank you.
Thank you so much. With that, members will turn to the table for questions or comments. And I've got Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mine is for Assistant Director Morse, sorry. Don't run too fast. And while you're coming back, my question is as it relates to in Subdivision 1, Subsection B, it says that half of the grants must be available to school districts in the metro area and half outside the metropolitan area. Can you talk to me about why that is and why we wouldn't just target the grants based on where the needs are and why there's a geographic?
Assistant Commissioner Morris, Dr. Morris.
That was quite the promotion there. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Jordan. I think that the desire with many of our grants is to make sure that they're having a statewide impact. So it is twofold. It's getting the money where it matters, but also making sure that it's available and accessible across the state. And so that's one of the conversations that we've been having with Representative Bennett, is to talk about just precisely what are the best ways to achieve both of those goals in language.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And are the needs that 50% of the funding needs to go to the school districts in the 7-county metro area and 50% need to go to districts in greater Minnesota? Is that how the breakdown of the need works?
Ms. Morris.
Madam Chair, Representative Jordan, I don't know that off the top of my head, but I think one of the ways that we can implement this is to make sure that there's flexibility to make sure that it goes to where the need is. And it looks like my colleague, Mr. Uni, might have maybe confirmation of where the need is throughout the state.
Mr. Uni, state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations in the Minnesota Department of Education. Representative Jordan, this is a good question. I don't have the exact data, but and this is into the weeds, but I think, and this is where we would like to continue to work with the author on language to meet exactly what you're talking about. In at risk of moving focus away from the bill at hand to the governor's bill, in our bill, we do have language specifically around the section in the teacher workforce shortage area that talks about getting funding for teachers working with students receiving special education services, the training they need to be in compliance with the federal OSET memo. We do have language that says that the commissioner may also waive the requirement to award an equal number of grants between applicants in greater Minnesota and those in the metropolitan area if necessary to meet the prioritized teacher workforce needs. So that's something that we could work through administratively to tailor the need. I think the figures are around what we've noticed, like 800 educators currently have the need. I just don't know what the split is geographically, but we do have that language, and I'm sure we can continue to work on it if need be, but that does go to the issue that you raised there.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Uni. Representative Jordan, any follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I think we need to address our special education shortage. We need to make sure that we're meeting our shortages everywhere. And so that I would hope that the bill language would reflect that.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Yes, we definitely need to make sure we're in compliance. Representative Reed?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick comment, and thank you to the authors for bringing this bill forward. I thought the testimony from Ms. Bree Bednar was really great. I think we have, I think it's really difficult in midlife or mid-career to change and to, you know, take up the expense of going back to school and getting certified. I think that is a real issue, so I'm glad that we're addressing the needs of people who, you know, are already doing the work, but they just need help with the tuition to go further. So I'm really excited to see that this is moving forward, and I fully support it. So thank you very much for testifying, and I look forward to seeing this pass.
Thank you, Representative Ream. And with that, seeing no further questions or comments, Representative Knudsen. Oh, Representative Baker, did you have somebody?
No.
Oh, okay. I saw movement, so I just want to make sure. Representative Knudsen, final comments.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bennett and I, thank you, and we ask, you know, for your support. So thank you.
Thank you so much. With that, members, the chair will lay over House File 1589 for possible inclusion in the education finance bill. And members, thank you for your work today. As a reminder, tomorrow we are meeting once again. Can't get rid of us. 10:30 a.m., but we will be in room 10 in the state office building. That's room 10, state office building, 10:30 a.m. tomorrow. We are adjourned.